President Obama wants to build one of the fastest supercomputers ever in the next 15 years. The exascale computer would run about 30 times faster than today's fastest supercomputer. It's part of the National Strategic Computing Initiative in collaboration with the Energy Department, the Defense Department, and the National Science Foundation. Simone Zickman is the Chief Technology Officer for Attain's Federal Services Division, former Chief Information Officer at the Commerce Department, and looking at this project. Simone, this is something that you know firsthand in a previous life. Why do you think this is either a big deal or not such a big deal? Thanks for coming on today.
Well, I'm happy to be here, Francis. Thank you for having me. This is, it depends on how you look at it. I think it certainly is a big deal for a specific area of technology, really a cutting-edge area that's being pushed by R&D developments that are generally heavily funded by the federal government. And so in that sense, it's a big deal for something like this to rise to the level of an executive order. This is really not just the National Science Foundation or some of the other research agencies, DOE and DARPA, saying we're going to invest in this area. This is the president identifying this as what effectively is a national priority. So in that sense, it truly is a big deal. This is a higher profile announcement of a focus in R&D in this area than we've seen before.
Is it your sense, though, that some of this, or maybe a lot of it, is symbolic? Because I did the math, and it appears that just by Moore's law, we can eventually get to this level in a similar time frame to what the president's proposing.
Well, I think that is quite likely true. I had also gone online and taken a look at the trends that are out there. And for anybody who's listening, who's interested, you can go to top500.org. And they have many, many years of supercomputing trends, both the fastest, the number one fastest computer, as well as the top 500 computers globally over many years. And if you look at the trend lines there, it does look like the trend line will naturally cross the target that the president has set, even prior to the goal that the president has defined for the U.S. hitting it. My own rough estimates is that we'll probably end up by 2025, which is the one decade target that the president set, will probably end up with the fastest computer globally, if not at least in the U.S., being, I'm guessing, about five times faster than the president's goal. But nevertheless, I think it is a big deal for the recognition that this is important, an investment in research in this area. And I think what's more important is looking at the content of what the president is proposing. So this is not just accelerating faster processors and architectures. If you look at the executive order itself, it includes coming up with ways of making supercomputers more programmable, really focusing on the software and the programming itself associated with putting applications on supercomputers, and also how to deal with the eventual end of Moore's law helping us. So at some point, processors will cease to, in themselves, get faster as a result of manufacturing of better processors. And so how are we going to deal with sustaining improvements in computing once we hit the wall of Moore's law?
All of the concepts that you've described in this and in the notes that you sent over, I get. The part of it that I'm not quite sure that I'm getting is the scale of this. The initiative that the president outlined, the target that he wants, is reaching an exaflop supercomputer within the next decade. What is an exaflop anyway in context of current computing power?
Well, so that's it's a little hard to envision. An exaflop is 1,000 petaflops, or a quintillion floating point operations per second. So, floating point operation is an addition, subtraction, division, or multiplication, a single operation done between two numbers. So, we are, we're talking about a billion calculations per second, and that's really hard to imagine computation at that level. But some of the types of applications that really require this high level of performance are not the types of things that people are used to doing in their offices with PCs. This is really involving things like weather prediction, modeling of explosions, very sophisticated computation-intensive applications. There's a lot of scientific research funded by research and development agencies ranging from National Science Foundation to DOE and DARPA that require very high levels of computational power.
And you anticipated my next question, which is, what the heck does somebody do with an exaflop of computing power anyway? In the context of the way you frame it, I understand the necessity and desirability of being able to attain that. So I guess the dichotomy here is what companies in the private sector have been able to achieve vis-a-vis what the administration believes is necessary for the government to support in order to reach something that I guess they think in another way would not be attainable?
Well, the companies that are working in this area have, you know, they've sort of evolved a little bit over time, but the ones that are most heavily invested have been working in this area quite some time. So again, you can go to top500.org and look at the trends there. And the companies that do a lot of high-performance computing include IBM, Cray, Dell, HP, and a number of others. But there's always this question: these companies are doing R&D on their own, but there's always sort of a return on investment that they need to consider. And so regardless of where the forefront is and where the cutting edge is, there are always going to be demands and applications that require more power than is available by current systems. And so the government investment in this area is what helps prompt investment at the high end as opposed to investment at the commodity end. Companies tend to invest more of their own research and development dollars in the commodity areas because that's the kind of product and technology that they can sell much more broadly against wide sectors of government and commercial enterprises.
What does a desirable or useful or advantageous supercomputing policy look like in your view in the coming decade to two decades, Simone?
Well, I think the policy established in this federal executive order does make sense. It is starting to look beyond just the computing power that's available. It also starts to provide some signals regarding what the research and development priorities are in this area. And that's important because the last federal plan for high-end computing was released back in 2004. So it's now over a decade old. So there was an articulation of research investment priorities, but being as old as it is and knowing how quickly technology changes, one would expect the priorities today to be different from what they were a decade ago. And so this really provides some high-level indications of what the government's investment priority is from a research and development perspective.
What can we expect to see? You mentioned the end of Moore's Law, and that concept is mind-boggling to me, because it's just something I hadn't considered. I talk about Moore's Law when I talk about technology on this program and kind of take it for granted. So the idea that something that we take for granted not being there or not being applicable anymore is striking to me. What will bring about the end of that? You touched on it briefly, but more specifically, what brings about the end of Moore's Law? And do we have a time frame for when we're likely to achieve that sequence of events?
Well, so when we hit the end of Moore's Law depends on how you define Moore's Law. But if you look at the strictest definition of how many transistors you can fit on a microprocessor, the improvements that have been made in that measure have been the result of better and better manufacturing of microprocessors and essentially coming up with thinner and smaller components for these microprocessors. Eventually, where you hit the limit is the manufacturing capabilities can only go so far before you start to hit effects associated with quantum computing. So eventually, if I'm speaking figuratively to simplify things for people who don't have a strong physics background, but if you imagine a wire getting thinner and thinner and thinner, eventually it's going to be too thin to effectively allow information or electrons to pass through it. And so you start to run into effects associated with quantum computing that inhibit the microprocessors from operating the way they ordinarily would. If you think of a broader, more holistic definition of Moore's Law, you can continue to have system-level improvements. Even if you can't make faster microprocessors, you can have system-level improvements through better architectures, better programming languages, by moving components closer to one another, by having faster networking, better integration of various components, including storage and memory and computation and processors. So again, there are ways to continue squeezing out improvements, and when we're going to really hit that limit, I think is not clearly known. I think there are some estimates, but I think that the people who are really developing new technologies have managed to continue pushing improvements maybe farther than some might have originally anticipated.
It's an amazing field to consider, because the power that you described in some of the ways that people will use this kind of computing power, I don't think, 5 years ago, definitely 10 years ago, we were really considering these possibilities, Simone.
Well, that's true. And many of the applications are commercial. For example, genomics is one area. Pharmaceutical design is another area. So there's some areas where there's a strong interest in high-performance computing in the commercial sector. And then there are some that are more inherently governmental. So, for counterintelligence purposes, breaking of encryption is done with high-performance computing. Modeling of nuclear explosions, which is one of the important technologies needed to protect our nuclear stockpile, is another area. And that's one of the reasons why the government investment is important, is because in some cases, at least for some applications, the government is the primary customer for these types of systems.